cemetery.ca. Rafe Mayer joins me now. The legendary broadcaster and writer has a new book out, What the Bleep is Going On Here? It's another collection of essays on current events and more, from the environment to lawyers, the Vancouver Club to ghost season counter, to George W. Bush and provincial politics. He offers his take on all that. He received the Bruce Hutchison Lifetime Achievement Award in 2003, and in 2005 was inducted into the Canadian Association of Broadcasters Hall of Fame. He also writes a weekly column for the Tyee. I've long been a fan of Mayer, on air and now in print. This is a collection of editorials and commentary not to be missed. Its foreword is written by Gordon Gibson, published by Harbor. The book retails for $24.95. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program, Rafe Mayer. Good morning, Mr. Mayer.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Very well, yourself?
Not bad for an old guy.
I was going to say, how the bleep are you?
Well, I would answer it in kind. I'm pretty bleeping fine.
Who came up with the title for the book?
Well, I think actually my publisher... What's the matter with me, Rafe?
Howard White?
Yeah, Howard White. I think he was the one that actually came up with it. I don't remember what name I worked on as I was doing the book, but Howard White of Harbor Publishing, what's the matter with me? He's the one that suggested the title, and I think it turned out to be quite apt.
It did. Have you got a favorite essay in this book?
Probably the, for just fun, the one on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And are all Toronto teams, and then there are a couple on there that are to do with the environment that I feel quite happy with. Actually, Joel, to be truthful, I rather like this book. That's not true of all the books I've done, but I rather enjoyed doing all of it.
Gordon Gibson, who writes in the foreword, he mentioned something about you having common sense. Is common sense something that we're born with, or is that something we develop as we get older?
Well, I think there's a bit of both in there. I think most of us are born with some common sense, but others drift off, I think, into a position of hard theory or hard philosophy when they do things. And for example, the run-of-river situation we've got right now with 600 or 700 rivers being taken over by private producers of power and so on. I think that's Gordon Campbell, and it's philosophical. He's not using common sense at all. He's simply saying silently, I'm part of the Thatcher, Reagan, Milton Friedman, Fraser Institute philosophy, and there we are. I think an example of a more practical thinker was Bill Bennett back in his time, where he tended to look at these things from a common sense point of view and rather than a rhetorical or a philosophical one.
How did you come to your approach on the environment? Is that something that you developed over time, or is that something that you've always felt ever since you were a young kid growing up here in Vancouver?
Well, you know, it's interesting you should ask that, because looking back, you can come up with one answer, and if you're being absolutely honest and not looking back using hindsight, it's another story. I think, like most people, I began to become pretty concerned about the environment back in the 60s and 70s. But in those days, you know, there were beehive burners, and there were pulp mills dropping black liquor into the lake, into the river, etc. All very serious, but not to what we have today. And I guess what really got me going was kind of a strange incident. My colleague at the time, Jim, Lord, in any event, I'll think of it in a second. He was the environment, Jim Nielsen. He was the environment minister in cabinet. I took exception to one of his decisions. The next thing I know, the premier was sort of saying to me, well, you're so smart, you do it. And from that point on, I think I was pretty conscious of most things in the environment, particularly when we saved the Skagit River, which was going to be flooded by a dam in the United States. I think by that time I'd really become concerned about the entire environment and that we really weren't giving it enough attention.
You're quite involved with the Save Our Rivers organization, are you not?
Yes, I am. I'm a spokesman, spokesperson, I guess, nowadays, and consultant to write.
What sort of work do you, like, I mean, you talked about the privatization of rivers that you're all involved in stopping. What else are you, what else does the organization do?
Well, I think there are really two strings to the bow. One that you were mentioning before, the environmental aspect of this, you can't put power plants on streams or rivers without having a profound effect on that stream or river, for the simple reason that you have to control the flood of water. That's how you make electricity. and that simply cannot be good for fish. There are other factors as well. Not only is there the huge plants, you'd be surprised at the size of the plants for the small size of the rivers. There also has to be a nice big dirt road into this wilderness so that people can get back and forth. And the other thing, of course, which people tend to forget, they have to have transmission lines out, which means you've got to clear cut a hell of a lot of forest in order to get these transmission lines out. Now, when you look at that as sort of one stream, I guess that's one thing, but if you look at it in the hundreds of streams all over the province, you can see that the sort of wild, supernatural BC will be gone.
You spoke on Thursday downtown?
Yes, yeah.
That was... When you were asked, I looked on the internet and I see that you're speaking all over the province in the next few weeks.
Yes.
What's the message that you're giving to the people that come out to listen to you?
Oh, I forgot to mention the second string of the bow, which leads very neatly into the question you asked. The second and I think just as troublesome aspect of this whole run of the rivers is the loss of public power. Now, BC Hydro lost its bureaucracy, you will remember, a couple of years ago when the BC Hydro, under, of course, orders from the government, made a deal with Accenture to run the actual nuts and bolts of the corporation. The Accenture, people would probably like to know, is an outgrowth of the Enron case. Matter of fact, it really is the Arthur Andersen Consulting Company rebranded. So that part is already gone. The second part, which is the transmission lines, they've been moved over into a new Crown Corporation called British Columbia Transmission Corporation, BCTC. Now, if you look at that, it's just ripe for the privatization. And at the end of the day, the third part of it, the hydro with its dams and its barge thermal plant, are going to be left with a huge debt of somewhere around $7 billion, and they'll have no commensurate income to make that up. And so that's one of the messages we're making. This is for public power. Now, the government has created a number of sort of men of straw. They've come up and said, well, it'll have to be either Site C or run of the rivers, so we say it should be run of the rivers. Well, it's just not an either-or, Joseph, at this point. For one thing, there are a number of different sorts of and the sources of electricity coming, not the least of which is wind power, which obviously is only generated when the wind is blowing, but will give BC Hydro a tremendous relief off its own power power production. The other thing that people tend to forget is the downstream benefits of the Columbia River negotiated by W.A.C. Bennett. We've been taking that in cash. We can take that in power, which again would give us about 10% more power. Now, simple conservation methods would do the same thing. So that's part of the message. So really the message is that I'm taking around the province of it. The run of the rivers is bad from the environmental point of view and every other way, and losing BC Hydro and our public power is a terrible thing to have happen. And just very quickly before I let you go to the next question, one of the things that makes this so difficult to understand is these private power corporations are given a huge price set by BC Hydro, BC Hydro by the government. BC Hydro must buy this stuff. It means that these individual plants are worth millions and millions of dollars. Why would the province of British Columbia want to go from a place where they have public power, where if there's a profit it goes back into hotels and schools and so on, and instead of having that, have it in dividends going to mostly offshore shareholders, probably most of them American? Why would we want to give them the profit that we use for social services in British Columbia? The whole thing just makes no sense.
And do you think, though, that the message is resonating? And it seems to me that you're targeting this for next year's election, that you're working towards next year's election and some change. Will that change happen, do you think?
Well, you're right. That's what we're obviously aimed at. It's a crapshoot. My own personal feeling deep down is that, yes, it's going to have a very serious impact on the next election. Now, these kind of things, you never know you've won them till you win them. I'm thinking particularly of the Alcan situation, which we won, but we seem to have lost since. All of us, and there were hundreds of us fighting that, right up to the last minute, thought we'd lost, and all of a sudden, boom, Mr. Harcourt, the Commando 2 boat did. And I think that this is the kind of thing we're looking at here. But remember this, Joseph. All around the province, there are environmental problems that the public are annoyed at, and the government isn't listening. Tawasin is, of course, a very good example. The rest of Delta is a good example. Kitimat, Commando area is a good example. The Kootenays, where I'm going in about 10 days' time, is another example. The fish and sea life situation is another example. So the government is going to be going into the May 2009 election with a great number of environmental problems. Now, if the people who are opposed to those environmental invasions manage to get their act together on a province-wide basis instead of simply staying in their own little shell and fighting there, if it becomes a wide community thing, I think the Liberals could be in a lot of trouble.
Do you enjoy going out and speaking out? I mean, I saw that clip of you on YouTube where you gave that speech in I guess, where was it, Port Coquitlam?
Yeah, no, that's in Pitt Meadows.
In Pitt Meadows. And, I mean, the audience was great and you were great.
Well, you know, I feel very, very passionately about this. Probably, as a matter of fact, not probably, certainly, the thing I'm most proud of when I was in government was being the minister that negotiated the saving of the Skagit River and saved it from being a big stump-filled lake and so on and so forth, and it's now one of the most beautiful streams I hope you get a chance to look at that you'd ever find. So I know you have to have a certain amount of passion and conviction to get to people on these things. If you don't look like you care, and I assure you I really do care very deeply, but if you don't look like that, people simply aren't going to take any notice of you.
You still live in Lions Bay, correct?
Yes, indeed. I'm looking out at beautiful Lions Bay right now.
The Olympic construction up in that area, has that affected you much?
Yeah, it's oddly enough, it's been positive as well as negative. The negative thing is that you're stopped all the time, and all the things go along with the noise and so on. The positive thing is that because the traffic has had to slow down, we have not had fatalities like we had on a regular basis before. I wish I hadn't said that now, because I probably jinxed us. But so there has been the feeling that we're all going a little bit slower and driving a little more carefully.
To move on for just a second, there's an essay in the book on the Vancouver Club.
Yes.
And I've never been into the Vancouver Club at all, even though I've lived here my whole life. I'm sure a lot of people are in the same boat as I am. You're still a member. Do you still enjoy going in there?
Yeah, I do, Joseph. You know, and I was born into the Vancouver establishment and abandoned it as soon as I became old enough to do it. Instead of going to article with the large firms, my godfather was Lieutenant Governor Walter Owen. Instead of going to his firm and other firms, I went with sort of a Melvin Belli of the North, Tom Griffiths, and I constantly sort of worked my way out of it. However, I joined the Vancouver Club because my father put me up, and he died before my name came up, and I felt, well, I probably should do it. And that was 2 years ago, and it's an interesting experience because the people that are in there, in lots of ways, are not my kind of people. But I enjoy it. I enjoy it very much, and my wife and I, we eat there a couple, three times a week.
I mean, I must say, it's evocatively written. It makes you feel like you've been in there, and so...
Thank you for that. It's changed a lot, I tell the story in there, of course, about finally allowing women in the club and all this sort of thing. And if my father or my grandfather were alive to look at it today, I'm sure they'd faint dead away to see all these things, exercise rooms on the bottom, and their favorite library where everybody had too much to drink at noon, which was most of them, would go down to sleep. All those things are gone, and new solariums and jazz bands, or jazz combos, I should say. And it's a very much different place, but I love it. I love the new club.
You write in the book that you remembered where you were when John Kennedy died. Do you remember where you were when Robert Kennedy died, seeing that we're so close to the 40th anniversary of that?
Yeah, I remember very well. I was sitting in my law office in Vancouver, and my wife phoned me and told me what had happened. And I went out to the corner of Georgia and Granville, where there used to be a newsboy. That's how long ago it was. You don't see newsboys anymore. And I stood there with the news, and on the side of the Vancouver Hotel, they had one of these sort of moving news things, the lights move along, etc. And I remember it going from Kennedy shot, Kennedy shot, Kennedy shot, who suddenly Kennedy assassinated. And it was an awful feeling.
Did you write all the time?
Yeah, pretty well. You know, I have some columns I do. I do one for the TIE.ca, and I do another two for Opinion 250. And then, of course, the book. I've got another book, actually, in the can. It's done. I'm just looking for a publisher because it's much different to the kind that I've been publishing with Harbor, so I'm looking around for a publisher.
And how often, like, do you schedule your time to write, or do you just find that you write whenever you feel like it?
Yeah, mostly the latter. If I'm up against it for a deadline, of course, then you don't have the luxury of sort of waiting around. But most of the time, I find, Joseph, that I like writing so much that I often do it just when I don't have anything else particularly to do.
And you do it on a computer, not longhand?
Oh, yeah, I do it on a computer.
There's an essay in the book that I found particularly poignant, and I'm still thinking about it weeks after I first read it. It's the one on the other side. Well, it's called The Other Side. And you talk about three different experiences you've had that sort of make you wonder whether there's life after death.
Well, there's no question about it. They've made me wonder, and I won't give them all away, but there's one that particularly stays with me, and that's when I actually saw a ghost in my house. Now, people hear that and think, oh, my God, I knew the guy had some mental illness. I didn't realize he'd gone bonkers. But it was true. I was asleep, and I heard a noise. I looked up, and here was a woman walking into my room. And I asked her, you know, where she was from or why she was there. And as I went to turn the light on, before I did turn the light, she just disappeared. And that might have just ended it, the race hallucinations, except that when my wife told the story to one of our neighbors in our condo complex, she said, well, what can Rafe describe what she looks like? And she came over. I said, yes, I can. So she showed me a picture of the gathering of all of the neighbors at one time, and there she was. I pointed my finger at her. But the one thing I couldn't understand is why she was wearing this sort of strange white hat. In any event, I pointed to the right woman, and our neighbor said, well, that is the lady. He gave me her name, which I forgot for the moment. But she committed suicide in the bathroom just outside our bedroom. She lived in our place. And so there you are. Sort of believe it or not, I'm usually pretty skeptical about these things, but, you know, this happened to me.
You're 75 now? You're turning 76 this year, is that correct?
No, I'm 76. I'll be turning 77 on the last day of the year.
Really? Now, do you think about your own death?
Oh, sure. Sure, lots of the time. And, you know, it's like Woody Allen said, you know, I'm not scared of dying. I just don't want to be there when it happens. And this is sort of the way you get. And I'll tell you and what it does also, Joseph, it makes time much more precious. You find yourself actually doing things where other times you might have just sat in the corner and sucked your thumb. You really get out and try to get things done on a basis, but, you know, you just don't have much time to go. Well, that's one of the reasons I'm so passionately involved in Save Our Rivers. I'm in the last decade of my life, and I've got to do something while I've still got time.
Do you still do much TV work?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, more than ever. I have a program on Channel 10 called The Search, and it came about by my thinking, you know, when you first find out that you're going to die when you're a child, you spend the rest of your life looking for a way to get out of it the best you can. And I followed this program, The Search, where we put on ministers and priests and rabbis and so on and so forth to give their take on what happened after death and how you should prepare and whether or not there's a soul and a life hereafter, all those sorts of things. And the station just wasn't, they were very interested, but they didn't have the money to do it at first, and I forgot all about it until last October, I guess. And I got a call from the station manager saying, we think that's a hell of an idea, let's do it. So I did 13 episodes. And now I'm on for another 26 episodes this fall, and pretty sure another 26 for next spring. So it's kind of morphed into something rather interesting, and your readers might like to know it's on Channel 10 on Sunday nights at 7 p.m.
We'll look for that. Where are we, by the way, just to wrap up on the electoral reform file? I know that we're having a referendum again next year.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen there?
Well, I haven't been as active as I perhaps should have on that. It's difficult to say. I have a feeling if it's pushed properly that it'll go this time, because you know, you can look at it today. If there was a referendum today, no, I don't think it would pass, but we're not having it today. We're having it in just under a year's time. And I think by that time that people are going to be so fed up with the arrogance of the Liberal government and so on, and their lack of connection. I think that's what I find everywhere I speak. People do not feel connected to the government at all. I think that's going to set the mood so that that it will pass. But I'd like to tell you this. You know, I've been a great supporter over the years of the Green Party. But if Adrian Carr had not dissed the STV decision by the Electoral Committee and had simply said, well, it's not what we wanted, but it's better than we got, and went out and actually campaigned for it, that would have, I think, surely got the extra 2 or 3% it needed. And if it had come in, the Green Party would be looking at 12 or more seats at slam dunks right now, without even having to bother to campaign, because it would have been taken away from them. As it is, of course, they're a remote party with a remote chance of getting any seats.
Rafe, much good luck with this book. Thanks for joining us today, and you know, as I said, continued good luck with it.
Well, thank you, Joseph. I always look forward to these chats, and I hope I have another book for you coming up in a few months, and we can chat again.
You're welcome anytime.
Thanks, Joseph.
The book is called What the Bleep is Going On Here. Rafe Mayer is its author, $24.95 from Harper Publishing. It is highly recommended, and do pick it up. I mean, you'll find something in there that'll interest you, and something that you didn't think would interest you. So RafeOnline.com is also his website. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Planta.